Goodness.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The bad news is that we have not reached an agreement, and I think that's bad news for Iran much more than it's bad news for the United States of America.
After the U.S. and Iran fail to reach a deal, President Trump orders a naval blockade of Iranian ports in the Strait of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf, a move Iran has decried as piracy. We'll get the latest. Then Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban concedes defeat, ending 16 years of far-right rule. Hungary's opposition leader, Peter Magyar, celebrated after winning by a landslide.
Today, the Hungarian people said yes to Europe. They said yes to a free Hungary. They said yes to represent them, to help them, to put the country in order, because this is a Hungarian government, the responsibility of the Hungarian government.
Then the Trump administration's fired six more immigration judges, including two who blocked the deportation of Rumeysa Öztürk and Mohsen Madawi, students who'd advocated for Palestinian rights. Plus, the federal government's preparing to begin automatically registering eligible men ages 18 to 26 for the military draft pool. We'll speak to an organizer with the Anti-Draft Coalition.
Readiness for a draft enables planning for larger, longer wars without having to think about whether people are willing to fight them. Our goal is to take the draft off the table as an option by repealing the Military Selective Service Act.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump's announced a naval blockade of the Strait of Hormuz starting 10 a.m. today. Iran called it an act of piracy. It comes after negotiations between the U.S. and Iran in Islamabad, Pakistan, collapsed Sunday without a deal. Vice President J.D. Vance declared Iran, quote, chose not to accept our terms, unquote. Iranian state media blamed, quote, excessive demands, unquote, from Washington for the talks' collapse. Meanwhile, President Trump watched a UFC cage fight in Miami with Secretary of State Marco Rubio during the ceasefire negotiations. This comes as CNN's reporting China's preparing to deliver new air defense systems to Iran within weeks following over a month of U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran. This is President Trump speaking to Fox News Sunday.
We didn't get there on the important issue. They want to have nuclear weapons. They're not going to have nuclear weapons. I've been saying that for 30 years. I would never allow that to happen before I was in politics. And that country will not have nuclear weapons.
In Lebanon, an Israeli strike killed an infant girl during her father's funeral on Sunday. The baby's sister, 7-year-old Aline Saeed, had attended the funeral wrapped in bloodied bandages from an Israeli strike on her family home Wednesday. The Israeli strike on Sunday also killed other relatives at the funeral. This is Nasser Saeed, the girl's grandfather.
What humanity are they talking about? This is humanity? This isn't humanity. This is a war crime. Where are the human rights? If a child is wounded in Israel, the whole world jumps up. Are we not people? Are we not humans? We're like them.
Lebanon's health ministry says Israeli attacks have killed over 2,000 people, including 165 children, since March 2nd. More than 1.2 million Lebanese have been displaced. On Sunday, an Israeli military tank rammed into UN peacekeeping vehicles twice in southern Lebanon, blocking a road used to access UN positions in the region. An Israeli strike in southern Lebanon also killed a Red Cross paramedic and injured another emergency worker. At least seven Palestinians were killed in Israeli strikes across the central and southern Gaza Strip on Saturday. An Israeli drone fired two missiles near a police post in Bereish refugee camp, hitting a group of civilians. According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, Israeli attacks have killed more than 700 Palestinians and injured more than 2,000 since the so-called ceasefire took effect last October. Meanwhile, a second global Samud flotilla carrying humanitarian aid set sail for Gaza on Sunday from Barcelona, aiming to break the Israeli blockade. Organizers are calling it the largest civilian maritime effort in history. Last October, the Israeli military halted the previous global Samud flotilla, arresting Greta Thunberg and more than 450 other participants. This is organizer Thiago Avila.
Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu need to fear the people because of their violations, both war criminals, but also the Epstein class and all the other things that they do, they will be made accountable and we will not stop.
In the United Kingdom, police arrested over 500 pro-Palestinian activists at London's Trafalgar Square on Saturday. They were holding signs that read, quote, "I oppose genocide, I support Palestine action," unquote. Palestine Action was declared a terrorist organization in the UK last year, making support for the group punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Britain's High Court struck down the ban earlier this year on free speech grounds. The government's appealed the ruling. Nearly 3,000 people have been arrested since the ban on Palestine Action was first imposed. Hundreds face charges. President Trump slammed Pope Leo on Sunday night, posting on Truth Social. He does not, quote, "want a pope who criticizes the president of the United States because I'm doing exactly what I was elected in a landslide to do." Trump claimed credit for Pope Leo's election, writing, "If I wasn't in the White House, Leo wouldn't be in the Vatican." Trump also criticized Pope Leo for meeting with David Axelrod, the former senior advisor to President Obama. Earlier today, President Trump posted an AI-generated image of himself as Jesus Christ. Here's Pope Leo responding to Trump's attacks.
I don't want to get into a debate with him. I don't think that the message of the gospel is meant to be abused in the way that some people are doing. And I will continue to speak out loudly against war.
Pope Leo is on a four-country trip in Africa. He's just landed in Algeria. The Trump administration's fired immigration judges who dismissed high-profile deportation cases against international students who joined protests in support of Palestinians. Judge Rupal Patel had ruled in January the government had no grounds to deport Rumeysa Öztürk, the Turkish-born tough student targeted by the Trump administration. Öztürk was personally targeted by Secretary of State Marco Rubio after she wrote an op-ed in a student newspaper critical of Tufts University's stances on Palestinian causes. Judge Patel was fired Friday, as were five other judges, including Nina Froese, who in February ended deportation proceedings against Columbia University Palestinian student Mohsen Madawi. Both of the fired judges told the New York Times they'd come under pressure from the Trump administration to order more deportations. In Hungary, the far-right Prime Minister Viktor Orban has conceded defeat in Sunday's parliamentary election, bringing 16 years of authoritarian rule to an end. Official results show Peter Magyar and his center-right pro-EU Tisza party won in a landslide with more than the two-thirds majority needed to reverse Orban-era changes to Hungary's constitution. Tens of thousands of people celebrated the results in the streets of Budapest Sunday night.
I think this nation woke up and we try to again to rebuild all the relationship in our families, because this is the most important thing, the loving kindness and to believe in the future. And we, this nation, one of the best nations in Europe, and we can show, we can change also other nations to wake up.
Orban has been Prime Minister of Hungary since 2010. Making him the European Union's longest-serving leader. He was supported by Russian President Vladimir Putin and the Trump administration. Last week, Vice President J.D. Vance traveled to Budapest to campaign for Orban ahead of Sunday's election. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. Nigeria's government's denying reports that its Air Force mistakenly bombed a crowded market Saturday after Amnesty International reported over 100 civilians, including children, were killed in an attack on the village of Zili in Yobe State. The village is near the border of Borno State, the epicenter of a Boko Haram insurgency that's ravaged the region for over a decade. In a statement, a spokesperson for Nigeria's president called the market a legitimate military target, adding, quote, the narrative that those who are killed are innocent civilians is totally false, unquote. The Nigerian military regularly bombs vast forest enclaves to battle Boko Haram and Islamic State groups operating throughout the region. In Southern California, a 29-year-old warehouse worker is being held without bail after his arrest in connection with a massive six-alarm fire at a paper products warehouse east of Los Angeles. Tuesday's fire at a Kimberly-Clark warehouse completely destroyed the 1.2 million square foot facility, causing an estimated $600 million in damages. Prosecutors say it was started by Chumel Abdulkarim, who allegedly texted a coworker afterward comparing himself to Luigi Mangione, the alleged killer of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. A social media video appears to show Abdulkarim using a lighter to set fire to paper products while criticizing corporate greed and inadequate pay.
All you had to do was pay us enough to live. All you had to do was pay us enough to live.
Ireland, a man climbed onto the roof of a U.S. military aircraft as it was parked at Shannon Airport Saturday using a hatchet to sabotage its wing and fuselage. Police said they arrested a man in his 40s but didn't identify him. His action caused extensive damage to the $75 million C-130 Hercules military transport. Shannon Airport is the frequent site of protests demanding the Irish government end U.S. military chartered flights and weapons shipments to Israel. In California, Democratic Congressmember Eric Swalwell has suspended his gubernatorial campaign after a former staffer said he twice raped her when she was heavily intoxicated, leaving her bruised and bleeding. Three other women also alleged sexual misconduct by Swalwell in interviews with CNN. Swalwell denied the claims but said he would suspend his campaign for governor of California while fighting what he called serious false allegations. On Saturday, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office said it had launched an investigation into the rape allegations. A growing number of lawmakers, including Democrats, are calling on Swalwell to resign from Congress. Many are also calling on Texas Republican Congressmember Tony Gonzalez to quit, too, after he admitted to an affair with a former staffer who later took her own life, burning herself to death. Gonzalez is also accused of sending sexually explicit messages to a former campaign aide. And New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani marked his first 100 days in office with a pair of rallies Sunday, first at Terminal 5 in Manhattan and later at the Knockdown Center in Queens. Independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders spoke at both events. Mayor Mamdani touted his accomplishments to roll out 2,000 daycare seats in low-income neighborhoods and fill 100,000 potholes in his first 100 days. He also announced New York City will open a city-owned grocery store in East Harlem by the end of his first term. This is Mayor Mamdani.
It is, I said, on that freezing January afternoon to more than 8.5 million New Yorkers, we will make no apology for what we believe. I was elected as a Democratic Socialist, and I will govern as a Democratic Socialist.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Traffic has halted again in the Strait of Hormuz after President Trump ordered the U.S. military to begin a naval blockade of all Iranian ports and coastal areas starting today at 10 a.m. Eastern. Iran denounced Trump's move as an illegal act amounting to piracy. Iran has threatened to strike Gulf ports in retaliation. Trump ordered the blockade after the U.S. and Iran failed to reach a deal to end the war following 21 hours of talks in Islamabad, Pakistan. The negotiations mark the highest-level talks between the two countries since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance headed the U.S. delegation, which included U.S. Envoy Steve Witkoff and Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Iranian negotiators had flown to Pakistan on a plane they called Minab 168 as a tribute to the 168 people killed in a U.S. missile strike on an elementary school in the city of Minab on February 28th. The plane carried images of the dead school children, along with blood-stained school bags recovered beneath the rubble. Global oil prices jumped after Trump announced the blockade. We're joined now by Yervan Ibrahimian, professor emeritus of history at the Graduate Center at the City University of New York, the author of several books, most recently Oil Crisis in Iran, From Nationalism to Coup d'Etat, his forthcoming book, 1979, An Inevitable Revolution. So your response to what transpired in Pakistan, the deal that was not reached between Iran and the United States, and what this means, professor?
Well, I think both sides actually presented basically ultimate demands which the other side couldn't accept. So it was a false start. But the implications of the failure is going to be actually quite drastic on the United States, because Trump's main concern has been to actually put a lid on the oil prices going up. And they've already jumped from $88 a barrel to over 100. They're going to increase more with the present crisis, with the embargo on the Straits of Hormuz. And as the crisis escalates, I think the U.S. will start bombing Iranian oil installations. Iran will retaliate by bombing the Gulf oil installations, gas installations. The oil prices then could really zoom up. Some people expect it to reach $200 a barrel. In that case, you know, it will have long-term implications for Wall Street and the whole American economy, not to mention the world economy. So things that Trump has tried to avoid, he's got actually himself into the major crisis, economic crisis.
Mm. You have Robert Malley, who had previously been involved with talks with Iran, saying, quote, 21 hours was 20 hours too many if the goal was to reiterate a demand Iran had already rejected. It was many hours too few if the goal was to negotiate. Your response?
He's exactly right. And I think, I mean, what Iran sees as the present crisis is an existential one, because although the talk has been regime change, the Israeli policies clearly in the last 10 years has been more than regime change. It's basically been the destruction of the Iranian state, Iranian nation. So Iran sees this as an existential threat. There was a speech that Trump made when he launched the attack on Iran a couple of weeks ago. It was actually quite interesting speech. He talked about various ethnic minorities being oppressed in Iran, and they were dying to be liberated from Iranian control. And he listed the obvious ethnic groups, but then there was one ethnic group that really I'd never heard of. So I scratched my head, what is this group? And I did what most people do, you Google. And lo and behold, this ethnic group actually exists in the other side of the Caucasus Mountains in Dagestan. So you wonder what reason they had for putting this ethnic group that doesn't exist in Iran as one of the ethnic groups, unless there's some sinister idea that the Israelis have of a civil war in Iran where they will recruit actually mercenaries from the other side of the Caucasus to bring into Iran. Of course, this sounds far-fetched, but this is what actually happened in Syria. You had a lot of Chechens actually brought in to fight against Assad. So the Israelis may be thinking in those terms of actually a long civil war in Iran where they would be bringing in mercenaries from outside. Mm. So for this reason, I think Iran sees this as a real serious existential war. It's not just a question of a minor sort of fine-tuning relations with the United States.
You've written about oil in Iran a great deal. Ghalibaf, the Speaker of Iran's parliament, tweeted on Sunday, enjoy the current pump figures. With the so-called blockade, soon you'll be nostalgic for $4 to $5 per gallon gas.
Yeah. I mean, the price could go up to $200 a barrel, even more than that, if basically the Gulf oil, it's not just Iranian oil, but the whole Gulf oil and gas is actually cut off from the world market.
So let's talk about what Iran wants right now and what the U.S. wants. 10 o'clock a.m., we're broadcasting right before that. Eastern time is when the U.S. Navy blockades, apparently, the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. What exactly this means? How will the Gulf nations be affected? How will Iran be affected? Because it both exports oil, but of course, it needs oil and it makes a great deal of its own oil.
Yeah, I mean, it won't break Iran because Iran has other ways of actually exporting oil. It'll obviously be a hardship, but it'll be a much worse hardship on the Gulf states if Iran actually dismantles their oil installations, and that affects directly United States economy because so much of Gulf oil money. Gas money actually goes into high-tech United States, and much of the American, modern technology is funded by subsidies from the various Gulf states. So it would have drastic repercussions on U.S. economy.
What does Trump want? His latest, and what Vance said, right? Vance leaves the Hungarian prime minister campaigning for him, Orban, who is soundly defeated, and then goes to Islamabad to lead this negotiation. He says it's all about nuclear weapons. Vance said, the simple fact is we need an affirmative commitment that they will not seek a nuclear weapon. They will not seek the tools that will enable them quickly to achieve a nuclear weapon. Your response?
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly what the Obama agreement was.
That Trump pulled out of.
Yes, which Trump pulled out. But if you look at that agreement, basically it said Iran had the right to enrich, but it had to be supervised to make sure it couldn't enrich to the level of nuclear weapons. So Netanyahu claims it was a vague agreement. In fact, it was very precise. Iran could enrich to 3.67% of uranium. That's as precise as you can get. It was limited to 200 grams of enriched uranium. And also, it was everything was supervised. There were 140 international monitors, including American monitors. So this was an incredibly tight procedure to make sure that Iran would actually fulfill its promise not to go into nuclear weapons. When Trump pulled out of that, he basically unwound the whole system. And the best he can get is going back to that. So demand that Iran should have no nuclear enrichment is a non-starter. The best he could get is go back, permit Iran to have enrichment, but with on monitoring that it would not be weapon enrichment.
We just have a minute. In a call with the Russian President Putin, Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian said a deal is, quote, not out of reach. So if you can talk about where you see this all headed.
Well, there are people in Iran, in the National Security Council, including Pezeshkian, who think that they can make a deal with United States. And they've been there a long time. But there are also people now, I think, hardliner, who are stronger now than before the war, who are arguing that you can't make a deal with Trump. even if he makes a deal with Trump, makes a deal, he could the following week decide if he's going to pull out. So it's a non-starter from their point of view, unless U.S. can actually make full commitments. And I don't see how they can do that, because Trump is basically untrustworthy. So from that point of view, I think the hardliners in Iran could argue persuasively the more the pressure they have, the more the prices are going to go up. The more it goes up, sooner or later, the patient will have a heart attack or a stroke. So they have an upper hand at the moment.
Yervan Ibrahimian, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Professor Emeritus of History at the Graduate Center at City University of New York, author of several books, most recently Oil Crisis in Iran, his forthcoming book, 1979, An Inevitable Revolution. Coming up, Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban concedes defeat, ending 16 years of far-right rule. Stay with us.
So.
Safu by Amadou and Mariam, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. In Hungary, official results from Sunday's parliamentary election show opposition candidate Peter Magyar won in a landslide with more than two-thirds majority needed to amend Hungary's constitution. Hungary's far-right leader, Prime Minister Viktor Orban, was defeated after 16 years in power. Magyar spoke to supporters Sunday night.
In the history of democratic Hungary, never before have so many people voted, and never before has a single party been given such a strong mandate as TISA. Thank you for believing that it can be done. Thank you for believing that we change our fate. Thank you for believing that we ourselves, the Hungarian people, write our own history. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Viktor Orban was elected in 2010, making him the European Union's longest-serving leader. His re-election campaign was supported by Russian President Vladimir Putin and the Trump administration. Last week, Vice President J.D. Vance traveled to Budapest to campaign for Orban ahead of the election. Orban conceded defeat to supporters after vote counting showed he was roundly defeated.
Dear friends, the election result is not final yet, but it is understandable and clear. The election result is painful for us, but clear. The responsibility and possibility of governing was not given to us. I have congratulated the winner.
For more, we go to the Hungarian capital, to Budapest, where we're joined by the journalist and analyst Szilard Pap. He is an editor with Partizan, a popular Hungarian independent media channel broadcast on YouTube. Szilard, welcome to Democracy Now! Talk about what happened, the significance of Orban being defeated, and what happened in the streets last night.
Yes, yeah, so an entire one-generation rule of Viktor Orban has ended yesterday, and I walked around after we closed our election night broadcast. I walked around the city for 2 hours, and everybody was partying on the streets, strangers were hugging each other's, music, drinks, cars honking. So basically it was like a street carnival for the entire night.
So talk about what happened. How was he defeated, and who Peter Magyar is?
So in order to understand the Hungarian political situation, I think we have to understand what was the forces that brought Viktor Orban to this very long period in power. And I think here we have to see, on one hand, we have to see the kind of like generalized disillusionment of Hungarian people with the results of the liberal transition after communism in 1989. So the promises of this democratic transition were not kept up. And afterwards, around the 2008 financial crisis, the signs of generalized economic mismanagement were also seen. And so basically, Orbán promised to right the wrongs of the first 20 years of Hungarian democracy, to end with technocracy, to end with this kind of austerity politics, and to